Remind me the 2 years.
I spent 2 years in remand, and I spent 15 years in prison. Even when I was going, my son, my little son, was crying and following the car, the police car.
So that day, mob beating or whatever, so they just jump on me, hitting me with stones, everything. They wanted to kill me, even to the sense that they've gotten to the point where they realize I'm almost dying. They decide to set fire on me.
I was ignorant about the law. Whatever they raise issue in Ghana, they always say ignorant about the law is not an excuse. As long as the law finds you in his custody, he's going to deal with you.
What if your life was turned upside down in a single moment? And every other moment after that? Welcome to the Let's Talk Human Rights podcast. This episode is a collaboration between the Friedrich Naumann Foundation and the PAWS Foundation in Ghana. I am your host, Masechaba Masemola Wamdaka, and I'm happy to have you listening again. Three people, three lives severely altered by unfortunate incidents and misconstrued facts. In this episode, I follow the lives of three formerly incarcerated persons and how initially the criminal justice system led them down a murky path before justice could one day be fairly served.
Our prison is overcrowded, and it's because we have a number of remand prisoners whose cases have not been determined yet. They don't know their fate. Some have been in for 8-9 years. Mm-hmm. They don't know when they will be tried or when they will go home. And these remand prisoners have occupied the greater part of our prison. That is what has resulted in the congestion we have in our prison. The way out again congest the area by trying the cases of the remand prisoners as soon as possible matter.
In 2021, 63.2% of convicts in the Kumasi Central Prisons were given sentences less than 2 years imprisonment. In 2020 and 2019, persons convicted of misdemeanor formed 64 and 62% of prison population respectively. A proposed bill on community service sentencing is expected to deal with misdemeanor offenses with communal sentences to decrease prison population.
Ghana, also formerly known as the Gold Coast. I find myself back in Accra after almost a decade of absence from the bustling city with a rich history and, dare I say, the home of the best jollof rice in West Africa. As I'm driving through the streets of Accra to my home for the next couple of days, I can't help but notice how much has changed. The traffic will humble the soul of any human being. In my state of admiration, as we whiz past all the newly discovered buildings, I am brought back to what brings me here. Ghana is a country known for its legacy in upholding democratic principles and the respect of human rights. As a stellar example, not just for West Africa, but for the continent at large, Ghana has always benchmarked itself on the forefront of development as a nation and for its people. An important factor for development and growth is being able to recognize and acknowledge successes and challenges and seeing how to mitigate them. We explore Ghana's criminal justice system and probe the recent gains made with abolishing the death penalty for ordinary crimes. The truth is, this reality can play itself out anywhere. The case of prisoners in remand for long periods of time is not just a Ghana occurrence. This happens everywhere around the world. The criminal justice system, in many ways, struggles with the sheer volume of cases being processed, and the capacity of various functions are simply overloaded. This poses a more serious issue around why crime happens in the first place in a society at such scale. There are, of course, the necessary steps which should allow for more efficient ways of identifying and categorizing crimes, especially where the crime was never committed. My three formerly incarcerated interviewees share some difficult times around their experience of the law and how due process failed them. Gideon Owu's story of falling in love for the first time and how one innocent moment changed the trajectory of his life forever still leaves him baffled.
My name is Gideon O, a formerly incarcerated person.
Gideon, take me back to the day that the crime was committed.
We live in the same vicinity and I stay with my dad and my stepmom. Yeah, though things were okay in the family, but living with your stepmom, there are always a consequence to it. It's either you will not be get access to everything because she is also believing that you belong to someone's mother, and when you become good in the future, you are going to take care of the mother, not you. So I was schooling. I was having difficulty paying my school fees. So there was a certain man in our vicinity who decided to be assisting me. So sometimes he helped me by giving me money to even pay my fees. And I also go to his place and run around for him. So there was a fateful day that we went to their family at Eastern Region, and the misfortune happened. Out of ignorance, I had an affair with their daughter. That was when we came back to Accra, and he was angry and he called for my arrest. That night, I was a little bit scared. I don't know exactly what happened. I don't know how it happened. So after everything, I caught myself short and I was like, what did I do? What has happened? And he came to our house and told my mom that you are caused for my arrest. So I was scared.
And all of this was because you dated his daughter?
Yeah, I dated his daughter. So when I came back, he called for my arrest and I was arrested. And I was sent to a police station.
What was the charge?
I was charged for defiling her daughter.
Amma Forson, doing what she loved to do to support her family, going about it like any other day, as she had done for years, selling home-cooked meals. To be labeled a narcotics peddler?
Where I stay, there was no fence wall. It's a pathway. People pass, everybody passed, and there was a street far away from my house. That was where they pick up the substance and they say it belongs to me. When they asked me that we should go to the police station, because I knew that I wasn't the one who was selling it. So I was told that when we went to the police station, and it's not you, they will allow me to come back home. Even when I was going, my little son was crying and following the police car. One of my worst experiences that I had in prison is, whenever it is 4:30, they have to gather everybody and lock you in the cell. And sometimes when someone committed a crime or disrespect, they have to gather everybody and put them in one cell and pour water in the cell. Even the bed that you're supposed to sleep, they'll wet the bed for you and they'll ask you to be there and they'll lock you guys. And when I remember this, I feel like, what I have not done, and I'm here suffering for it.
And Richard Nyarko, as simple as being in the wrong place at the wrong time, an everyday driver turned getaway car driver in a robbery? Wrong place, wrong time.
Yes, but where I admit my fault was that when we were going, he told me that when he sold the car, he would give me some money. In fact, he mentioned 1 million that time.
This can't be real. It's like something out of a fictional novel. Why do they find themselves here? Navigating the course of their lost lives at the expense of the criminal justice system, which failed to assess and investigate their alleged crimes carefully, these three people found themselves with criminal records and deemed unworthy by society, the very communities they lived and served in. This is Gideon Owu.
So when we went to the first court, there's a lot of case by then, so they should adjourn the case. So they adjourned the case for 2 months. So I came back to the police custody to stay there for 2 months before I went to the court again. The next day I went to the court, what the judge told me was that, stop sharing tears because she hasn't even started the case yet because it will take me 1 year. I remember vividly, she told me to the point that she stopped sharing tears. It will take me 1 year before they'll start the case.
Here we have Amma Forson interpreted through Gideon Owu.
And she will ask herself that, why is she passing through all these things? But for now, she's having a lot of pain inside her. She even wished like she would even have someone who would even take her out of the country to go and assist her and or help do washing, do anything, at least she can put her trust or her attention to that person and you forget everything way back in Ghana.
And lastly, Richard Nyarko.
After we got into his praise, he was asking me, young as I was, why am I still driving? Then I explained why I got into driving, that I didn't know my father. And then my mom also, she's deaf and dumb. And I grew up to meet no proper parental care. And looking at myself and my education background also was not good. I could not complete even the basic. So at that time, apart from the driving, there was no choice to survive.
What is the price to be paid on the miscarriage of justice? What could have gone so wrong, which is now being made right? The three former inmates share their stories and how grossly impacted they found their lives as a result. Meet Jonathan Osei Owusu, the founder and executive director of PAS Foundation, a leading human rights civil society organization in Ghana. He is known for his expertise and innovation in policy reform, criminal justice, and human rights advocacy. He facilitates the state-led intervention Justice for All program for remand pre-trial detainee prisoners towards prison decongestion.
In times of the crime and offenses that take a lot of people to prison, you could imagine that there are some of them who committed misdemeanors and are suffering because we do not have what we call the community service. And so always our laws are looking at custodial sentence, fine, or in some few situations, suspension. That is why it has also amounted to the cry to decongest our prisons, because our prisons have been congested. It's not every crime that a person must be sent to custody. So we need to make sure we decriminalize and declassify some of the offenses that seems to be so huge but are minor based on our culture. These are some of the classifications that we are looking at. Aside, when one is taken to prison, we do not have that robust system to be able to classify them and put them in different cells. But at the end of the day, they are all coming out together. No matter your crime, they stay and mix up together. And that is something that the country is looking out for, because we've come of age. There has been several significant changes in our criminal jurisprudence, but we still have a long way to go.
What can be learned from the prison reform system in Ghana, which the PAS Foundation, which you're spearheading and championing, which I know is currently will be mirrored in other countries in West Africa as well?
I think there is a unique program called the Justice for All program that set up mobile courts, special court in prison, to adjudicate pre-trial cases. You see, the prisons were congested with close to over 42% overcrowding rate, but specifically to reach some of the prisons are overcrowded in a rate of 200%, not even 100. So you can imagine it depends on the location. So at the end of the day, this is one of the flagship programs that we, PAS Foundation, are proud of, anchoring the process with the state to be able to get the effect that we have gotten. When we went to Kenya, we also learned a project called the African Prisons Project. And then we came to Ghana. We were helping and assisting them to get the justice for all done in their jurisdiction as All for Justice. We were also learning from their prisons project, and we named ours In Prison Paralegal Program. It is that program that trains inmates and officers in prison as paralegals to have those who want to represent themselves in court do that on self-representation.
If the criminal justice system was allowing remand prisoners to succumb to circumstances on this initial end, what did it look like for prisoners on death row? What made the environment ripe for the conversation of abolishing the death penalty for ordinary crimes? In Ghana, a significant number of prison cases involve individuals on remand for extended periods, sometimes years before trial. This serious issue contributes to overcrowding and raises concerns about access to justice. Amnesty International has noted that some suspects are not brought before a court within the required 48 hours after arrest, and some police officers even signed remand warrants themselves, bypassing the court. The famous old saying, which says it could happen to you too, or life happens, reads true and is telling of how people can find themselves dealing with the firm hand of the law. This is by no means to trivialize how crimes take place or when criminals are apprehended for committing crime. It is, however, the case that the long arm of the law turns very slowly and that justice delayed can be justice denied. Lawyer, human rights fundi, and Member of Parliament, Honourable Francis Xavier Sosu, as well as human rights activist and expert Genevieve Partington, expand on this recent success in meeting international declarations and norms of respecting freedoms and rights of all persons, even prisoners.
I would say, like in every other country, Ghana's criminal justice system is not a perfect one because it's a human creation. Right from police investigators to prosecutors to judges and eventually to either prison authorities that may keep inmates, there are fallibilities and difficulties and challenges. Some of these challenges stem from a lack of adequate facilities, lack of adequate investigation. Sometimes there are cases of mistaken identity. And so the justice system itself has its own challenges. And that is why the fallibilities of the justice system are the reasons why we don't need to make any punishment permanent or final, such that people will not have an opportunity to a second chance.
Genevieve agrees.
They are still on death row, so that has increased the death row numbers. We have about 180, maybe a little over, on death row currently. I know there are about 7 women on death row and the rest are men. We work a lot with Ghana Prison Service. They provide us with the statistics. And yeah, I mean, they were sentenced last year. They are still there. And that is why it's so important for Ghana to sign the ICCPR. We need to commute their sentences to life imprisonment. Currently, Amnesty International, along with the University of Ghana, we're doing a research on the mental well-being of persons on death row. We've interviewed about 80 inmates on death row, and it's quite obvious the psychological and emotional trauma that being on death row brings to these persons. If you look at statistics of persons on death row right now, most of them have a low level of education. That means they either didn't complete high school or they didn't go at all. A number of them don't speak very good English. They only speak the local languages. During court, they get a translator for the person, but most of the time they don't even understand what, you know, they are there for. Most of the time, they're also told to plead guilty to make things faster and easier. And due to lack of education and lack of knowing their rights, they just plead guilty.
Ghana is the 29th African country to abolish the death penalty. Globally, it is the 124th country to abolish it. Since the end of 2023, there were 180 prisoners on death row in Ghana. 6 new death row sentences were handed down in 2024 for charges of high treason. Since 1993, no one has been executed in Ghana. I get some insights into why this first step to the abolishment is a win for Ghana, especially when the law can send presumed innocent lives to years in remand for probable crimes they may not have committed.
The Ghana's prison in 2013 was declared by the UN Human Rights Rapporteur as a place that violates the rights of vulnerable people. In fact, when you take Article 15 of our Constitution, we talk about the dignity of man is inviolable and that whether they are in confinement or not, their dignity is supposed to be protected. And of course, they have the right to life, they have a right to food, they have a right to environment, they have a right to health, and sometimes right to be rehabilitated to education and recreation. But all these rights are completely denied when you're on a death row. And even access to light, access to a healthy environment. We must say that violation of the law, respect for human dignity, There is a thin line there. The fact that someone violates the law does not take away their right to dignity. That's how everybody would have to understand that people violate law for different reasons. We are not even interrogating the social factors and the sociocultural factors, the background situations, people who have lived in some abject poverty. That is not an excuse for commission of crime. But I'm saying that we have a society that has created some of these, you know, criminals. And so having denied them access to health, access to family, access to good jobs, and having gotten some of these young people becoming victims of being in conflict with the law, it does not give the state the right to take away their dignity merely because they are in conflict with the law.
So inadequate defense lawyers also contribute to wrongful convictions.
Absolutely.
And of course, by the time it gets to the death sentence, to correct errors on appeal, as you've just mentioned, becomes rather difficult. How often has this happened in the Ghanaian judicial system?
I mean, it happens every now and then. I mean, as a criminal defense lawyer and a human rights activist, I have seen this happen in just so many cases. They are not isolated cases. People have gone on appeal, they've been acquitted and discharged on appeal. Many do not have money to go on appeal. Many do not have money to even pick really good lawyer to defend them. So they end up, you know, in jail.
We've spoken about where things have gone wrong, but how is this being addressed?
As you speak about reforms and you think about the four main approaches which are applied to administering criminal justice, deterrence, restraint, retribution, and rehabilitation, would you argue that in these reforms, all of these things are definitely necessary? As you speak about, there are socialized causes around why certain people find themselves in a situation where the law is being applied to them. And maybe sometimes if it's mistaken identity or if it's really the innocence of being at the wrong place at the wrong time, but the way the laws are being applied get you into the system, and then the system, maybe not necessarily through the correct procedures being applied, find people in these situations where justice delayed is justice denied at the end of the day. So how would you speak to that in terms of when it speaks about retribution and rehabilitation?
Yeah, like you rightly said, our system is really trying to work on justice not being delayed, first of all. I know POS Foundation has done a lot in terms of access to justice for those on remand. So I know that to some level, they've reduced the numbers on remand. I must commend the Ghana Prison Service, though. There are programs running in terms of rehabilitation, and, you know, there's access to healthcare for the inmates. Some who have potential and probably would not have gotten that chance are, you know, being educated. Some are getting degrees because there are programs that collaborate with the prisons. So to some level, those who have access, and again, that's not those on death row, those who have committed far less crimes and they are there for some time, they are able to have access to education and things. So that's where you look at the reform, the rehabilitation side of things. But there needs to be more done, right, in terms of just getting them back into the system. Because a lot of these persons come out of prison and they have nothing. They don't have anywhere to start. They don't know how to get a job. They've been in the system for so long that some of them will actually recommit crimes to go back. Because if they are out in the world, they don't have anywhere to stay. They don't know where the next meal is coming from. It's something that our system in Ghana, our justice system needs to work on. And CSOs, like when persons come out from incarceration, how do we reintegrate them back into society, for example?
What do ordinary Ghanaians think about this?
For many Ghanaians, many do not even care about it, whether there is a death penalty or there's no death penalty. So it was a matter of leadership. Where do we place, you know, life? If life is so valued and that we need to protect lives, and you don't want to have a society that would still condemn killing and yet use state-sponsored killing as a means of punishment, then we should be bold enough to move the law from where it is to where we want it to be. And essentially, that's what we did with the death penalty bills. And I'm glad that I played a lead role in making those things happen.
We pivot to the story of Yaw Asante Ajikum and how his long-found freedom came at great cost to his dignity and how life perished in confinement when he is eventually deemed innocent. This is narrated through his lawyer, Mr. Bernard Shaw.
My name is George Bernard Shaw, and I'm a lawyer with a human rights background. So there are issues with the arrest there, because he was one, as you know, constitutionally derived from international human rights law. He had to be told the reason of his arrest. Somebody that he knows, a relative, had to be contacted to tell him the location where they were taking him. The police questioning, he had to have an independent witness, and also, more importantly, a lawyer. But none of these were made available to him. He was denied that, so they kept him there. And then they brought him to Accra. And at that time, he told them that, listen, this guy that you are looking for, yes, I know him because they repair bikes here, but I don't know what they do. And I have no idea about this robbery that you are accusing me of. Somehow, they didn't believe him. So they kept on looking for where the other robbers are. And that process took them 8 years whilst he was in remand at prison. So he wasn't even kept at an ordinary cell. He was taken to the prison. And he was there for 8 years until finally the case was tried. And this happened in 2002. And he was finally convicted and sentenced in 2010.
And what was the charge?
Conspiracy to rob and robbery. Those were the charges. And he was given 30 years in prison as his punishment, the sentence. So the prison reforms, in my opinion, should be twofold. One, proper prison reform geared towards rehabilitation of offenders. That's one aspect. And then the other aspect should be preventative, that is to prevent innocent people getting to prison in the first place. The prison have no mechanism or programs for the inmates. They are just like a reception bases where people who have been convicted are dumped. They are forgotten about, and they serve their sentence and they come out. There's nothing really productive towards rehabilitation. And then the system of preventing people going to prison, and within the context of the whole criminal justice system, there is no legal aid for people accused of crime. Even though Ghana has a legal aid system, few get the necessary help from lawyers, because one, the legal aid commission itself is very constrained. They don't get enough money, and lawyers who do legal aid cases get only 20% of the fee that private practitioners get. So if Ghana, our currency is cedis, so if you get 100 cedis to do a case in private practice, if you take a case under the legal aid system, you will only be paid 20 cedis. So that itself is disincentive for the lawyers. They don't take it on.
Was it a coerced confession?
That's what they claimed. They claimed at trial that it was forced. That's another problem of the justice system. There are a lot of false confessions, especially high-profile cases where the police have to deliver. They really force and beat them. But when it comes to court, because as you know, confessions have to be proved whether they were genuine or forced or coerced. It's a case of the word of the police against the word of the accused person. And most invariably, the judges accept the version of the police that we didn't beat them, they are lying, they are blah, blah. And one of the reforms that we are advocating for is for the recording, both audio and video, of police interviews, because that will eliminate the problem. But because in this case, they came and said they beat the hell out of us and made us thumbprint. They wrote our statements for us. They made a sign and all that. And they denied it in court. But again, the court didn't believe them.
Why is Yao's case such a landmark case in Ghana's criminal justice system, especially where we are now with his subsequent and recent release?
The judiciary is trying their best. They have a system, especially in relation to remand prisoners, a program called Justice for All, where they go to prisons. Judges actually go, and then they get some lawyers, visit the individual prisons, and on site have their cases tried. Justice for All is really centered on remand prisoners because the remand population was atrocious. But they have, I don't have the figures, but they have been able to significantly reduce the numbers because most of the cases had no merits. They have just been banked there. The papers have been lost. Nobody follows it and they are forgotten. So the Justice for All program initiated by the judiciary was very positive. But again, it's a question of numbers and time. And that program, even though it's going on properly, it's not as regular as it could be. So there are still cases there.
How were these three able to get their new lease on life through the Justice for All program? Richard shares his views on this.
After I served 16 years, 8 months, I went to a Supreme Court for a review of my case. Due to Justice for All program, which was organized by Mr. Jonathan at that time, we didn't have the opportunity when we were in the remand. The Justice for All came when I was already convicted. So through the Justice for All, we had the opportunity that, okay, those of us who are not qualified to benefit for the Justice for All, we can have the chance for filing an appeal through the Justice for All. Through Jonathan, I tried to seek more advice. I'm supposed to benefit because I spent 7 years in remand. So he was encouraging me to file an appeal within the prison yard. They set up an appeal school where those of us who have no legal support can go there to file. So I followed the process and I filed an appeal. So I went to the court without any counsel to argue my case that I was convicted wrongly. And I want the court to re-look into my case. But what happened was that documents cannot be traced. My charge sheet and everything concerning my case was nowhere, but I was having the judgment order with me. But because I was already convicted and having a judgment order, which proved that I was sentenced to 35 years, the Supreme Court cannot acquit and discharge me. The best thing they could do at that time was they reduced my sentence from 35 years to 25 years, of which I have to serve 1/3 of it. So the 1/3, it means 16 years, 8 months. So when they calculated plus the 7 years, 7 years some months, when they check from the court, I almost served 25 years at that time.
We speak again to Jonathan on the in-prison paralegal program and how Gideon found his freedom and his way to PAWS Foundation.
When it comes to the Justice for All program, we are able to set up this court, look at the pretrial cases and decongest the prisons. That is something that I know Kenya have come to understand the program and doing something similar called All for Justice, and Ghana is Justice for All. We are looking forward to hit other West African countries because this has been successful. The remand or pretrial population since the inception of this project, Justice for All, have reduced from 33% in 2007 to currently 11.5%. And that is huge. One percentage of reduction is hundreds of people. And so that is the program I think has helped and benefited Ghana's criminal justice system to decongest the prison. It is facilitated by the PAWS Foundation and being handled and led by the state through the Judicial Service of Ghana under the direct supervision of the Chief Justice. So at the end of the day, this is one of the flagship programs that we, PAWS Foundation, are proud of, anchoring to the process with the state to be able to get the effect that we have gotten. When we went to Kenya, we also learned a project called the African Prisons Project. And then we came to Ghana. While we were helping and assisting them to get the Justice for All done in their jurisdiction as All for Justice, we were also learning from their prisons project, and we named ours In Prison Paralegal Program. It is that program that trains inmates and officers in prison as paralegals to have those who want to represent themselves in court do that on self-representation.
And what is the success rate of that?
With that success rate, we piloted and now we are expanding. So we've had several people whose sentence were excessive. And so the court saw wisdom in the appeal submission and they reduced their sentence. Amaforsen is one among about 10 of the cases that were acquitted and discharged, meaning they didn't commit the crime. And so Armed Forces, for example, spent 4 years, 7 months until the program went to assist her, and then they wrote submission on appeal on self-representation. And during COVID time, we couldn't even go to court, but the court saw the need to agree with our submission that there was a miscarriage of justice and Armed Forces was acquitted. In fact, one of the fields that Ghana can be highlighted for progress is our criminal justice sector. And we think it's not just the judiciary. A lot is going on. Even the police, which has the biggest problems or challenges and causes almost half of the challenges we face in our criminal justice sector, is also receiving steady reforms. Just that side is not moving the pace at which the other institutions are moving. So these are some reforms we may recommend to others. But the final one I may want to touch on is the establishment of the FIPIN, Formerly Incarcerated Persons Network. The PAUSE Foundation established the Formerly Incarcerated Persons Network for the first time late last year to bring formerly incarcerated persons, what you call ex-convict, to form an association and help them get some profession and skills. Even though we've run out of funding, we are happy with the results we have gotten. We're teaching them how to make liquid soap, and we want to go in a commercial side. We're teaching them photography. We are teaching them other skills so that when you come out from prison, the hope is not gone or it's not lost. I can be a prisoner. You can be a prisoner. Even innocent people can be prisoners, because Mandela was in prison. Kwame Nkrumah was in prison. What crime did they commit, or what was their crime? So anybody can be in prison, and yet majority of us might have committed crimes. But the only salvation is that we have not been arrested or caught.
Justice for All is a program for remand prisoners. It's a program for those who have been in remand and their case have not been attended to. That's where Justice for All came in. My case, I was not caught. I was convicted by then. Justice for All, because I love what they do. I assist them. So I know them from inside one prison. And whenever they come, they deal a lot of people from different regions. So maybe some people speak Ewe, Ga, that we need to translate for Mr. Jonathan to understand. Then I have to take that part and be talking to the people, gathering their file, arranging them before they will come to the prison and come and do the Justice for All.
Gideon, tell me about your second chance and being with PAUSE Foundation and what that has done for you.
Being given a second chance is another, and working on the second chance too is another. I came from a step family, where I told you initially I'm with my dad and my stepmom. Before I would come out of prison, my mom passed away in December, but I heard she was sick. So it got a point, we cut communication. I no more try to reach her to check up on her. Whenever I call, they say she's not feeling well, so she can't. So we cut the communication. It's very painful that things that you've not done and you'll be sentenced to prison. And the most painful thing is that even when I went to prison, no family member of mine was ready to help me or assist me in any way until God gave Jonathan way to come to my aid.
In a nation where the complexities of the criminal justice system have long posed challenges, Ghana has made strides towards criminal justice reform with innovative policy interventions. One such intervention is the state-led Justice for All program, which started in 2007 as a unique partnership between the state, judicial services coordinators, and civil society, being the PAUSE Foundation. There are two criminal justice models, the crime control versus due process models. Two systems produced by Herbert Packer in 1964. Crime control model is a conservative approach to crime that focuses on protecting society from criminals by regulating criminal justice and conduct. Moreover, this model stresses strict and swift punishment for crimes. This is meant to strike fear in criminals and reassurance to society that criminals will get harshly punished. The crime control model's goal is also to get cases through the system swiftly and grant more powers to the courts. The due process model, on the other hand, is one which is said to be more liberal, as it favors or encapsulates the rights of criminals, driving aspects of fairness to safeguard against what can be viewed as flaws in the crime control system. It seeks to protect people from wrongful convictions. I just want to take you back slightly, Jonathan. With the two criminal justice models which are known, that being crime control versus due process, which would you say is more aligned to Ghana's criminal justice system? You spoke about looking at ways of not making the system punitive, but rather also looking at the angle of support. So with that in mind, which of the two would you say is more aligned to the Ghana criminal justice system?
When you look at the interventions like the Justice for All program, it is to solve the dilemma between crime control and due process. Somebody is suspected to have committed a crime. The police is investigating. You technically will have to finish investigating before you arrest. In our jurisdiction, it doesn't go that way. So the police, in order, based on the crime, to keep peace and security in control, they often will arrest. So on any suspicion, the law permits suspicion of crime, they can arrest. And that is one of the biggest reasons why we have a lot of people on remand. So when they are doing their work to control crime, sometimes it could be what we call police soup. Some people are in an uncompleted building smoking. I send my brother there, he's not smoking, but when the police come, they will arrest all of you. So they are controlling some crime. Maybe they suspect something, but due process must be followed. And lack of due process is what leaves most people in custody for this long. So if you ask of the two, crime check or control is heavily being done in our country. At the end of the day, we do not want them to lose sight of due process. And that is why some people's rights are violated. And that is the reason why we thank the state for pushing through the Justice for All and other things, so that quickly the court can go to their doorstep in the prisons to look at the situation, rather than leaving them hopeless without anything to do. So if you ask about the due process and crime check, I think both are working. But because of the system we have and lack of data, addressing system and etc., often authorities tend to abuse individuals' rights because of lack of due process.
How have the others found their way back to normalcy in their daily lives?
What can you say of the experience of what the family of Yao has endured over the years? What has that been like for them?
One word will be hell, because you can imagine within his own nuclear family, the wife who has left him now as a result of the incarceration, he had a child who was at 2 years at the time of his incarceration, and then his one daughter who was only 1 month old. And these children were taken away from him because he was in prison. And these children have grown up for the better part of 23 years without seeing their father, and without having a mother to care for them. So they were farmed out to distant or close relatives.
Would you say your time in prison changed you?
100%. 100%, because I was not attending church, or let me use the word, I was not born again before my conviction or before my arrest. I don't even see the reason why I should go to church or give my life to Jesus. Nobody has ever preached to me personally, but it was in the prison. I don't know your belief, but I can boldly tell you that while I was about to die at that time, I was hearing a voice that, Richard, you will not die. But I don't know the voice. From there to the police hospital, people were coming to preach to me. And when I got to the prison, I now realized the reason why I was brought to the prison, just to have a change of mind. But there are so many things I was also doing which is not right. Even though I've not gone to steal people, I've not gone to commit any crime, but I could realize that, no, there is so many things God wants to rescue me from. I'm not afraid to tell you that at that young as I was, I smoke, I drink. I was just doing something to forget about the pain of improper parental care and all those things to make myself okay.
As Gideon rightly says, don't we all deserve a second chance?
So when I see people have the second chance, I feel so happy for them because I knew one day my chance will come because my day was numbered. But one thing that I always say to myself is, yeah, your freedom will come. When they give you the freedom, what's next? Now you are going to face the society. It's even harder than being inside prison. Reintegration or mingling with the society is even harder. You may get to a point, you'll be there, people will say, oh, I'm coming, everybody is waking up. You don't know this guy, the arm robber, this guy went to prison, you don't know this boy. It kills your morale, it kills your vim, you can't even stand to do anything because the stigma is very, very high.
And lastly, we visit with Amma Forson, whose story doesn't have a positive outcome. In 2016, a 62-year-old food vendor was convicted and sentenced to 11 years imprisonment and hard labor for possession of narcotics. Questionable circumstances surround her arrest and incarceration.
And what is her relationship presently with her family?
When I came out from prison, my one sibling, a sister to me, I normally stays with her. But it got a point, she also was telling me that during the evening, I should go out and go and look for money. I just returned back from prison. Where am I going to go and find the money? So because of the way and manner she's relating with me, I have to move from her side. And there was a mobile money vendor at the top of the AAC mall. So normally I go there to go and sleep over there in the evening when they close from there. And the most painful thing that I miss a lot about my son was that whenever it is Mother's Day, he will go out and buy one CD toffee and bring it to him. He said, Mommy, this is what I've got for you. I have a toffee for you. Happy Mother's Day. And this Mother's Day passed away. She really felt the pain a lot. She nearly even taken medicine to die. He even brought the medicine down that he wanted to take so that he will end up her life. And it really, really, really hurting her.
4 years and 7 months into her time in prison, she was acquitted through the in-person paralegal program facilitated by PAWS Foundation.
When I was in prison, I was not having any hope. But there was a day that I was called by one officer that there was a man called Mr. Jonathan wanted to help me out. As she heard it, she just felt reluctant towards it. There came a time she was called that today is your day of release. I was so surprised. And as I was surprised, they only gave me 20 CDs and they asked me to go. When you got outside the prison, I can't even find my way out to my home.
Looking at the function of the Commission on Human Rights and Administrative Justice, or SHRAJ, as it's widely known, we can applaud and commend institutions in Ghana for their part in centering criminal justice reforms in favor of human rights protection. One can only hope that these reforms will further ensure that the plight of our three never see the light of day again.
The advice I want to put out there is that when you see two people fighting, tell them to forget it. It hurt me, it bites me, all these things will not end up anything. But when I went to prison, I learned a lot. I saw people who, with anger issue, because of girlfriend, boyfriend, being found themselves in a murder case and they end up in condemned. So you even advise anybody that whenever even someone try to fight you, just don't retaliate, just leave and go. It's far, far better than retaliating. This is the secret about prisoner. It's where we find ourselves wrong. But when there has been a systemic way of reintegrating us back into the society, I think we can break the rate of recidivism going back to prison. We can break that rate. I know this will go far away. And my humble plea to you is we shouldn't always look at the good people. The bad people also have something to tell us. Let's learn from both. Whether the person commit the crime, I always believe myself that there's always a reason why someone may do something.
My life right now is good. Just that we are still hoping that the paper was asking of my passport, which I don't have. So
at this age, you don't have a passport because something has happened to you. I'm now repackaging, and I don't want to rush. I want to just do it gradually and look at how best I'll fully fit into society. Even though I'm out, but I'm not fully fit into the system because so many things have gone wrong and so many things have been destroyed. I have to really take my time to recollect all those things. So I can't say fully happy or everything is okay. I can say 50-50, but I thank God that I'm out of prison. That's why alone has given the 100% okay. So life now is okay because I can't compare it to the prison.
This journey has been a trying one of triumph over great adversity. The one thing that is certain is that they all get to see another day of their freedom, despite the serious torment they have unfairly endured. Ghana recognized the flaws in its system and has since embraced change for the better of society and a repaired social order. Ghana's judicial system on criminal justice has come a long way and continues to make the necessary amendments. Together with its very active civil society and professional network, the much-needed turnaround can and is being realized. My right, your right, our right. Humanity is and continues to be for us all. This has been the second episode of Season 6 of Let's Talk Human Rights, the FNF Africa podcast exploring various human rights issues. I have certainly enjoyed your company on the airwaves, as always, and your listenership. The Friedrich Naumann Foundation Sub-Saharan Africa, FNF, is an independent German organization that is committed to promoting liberal ideals and politics in Africa, such as human rights, the rule of law, democracy, innovation, digitization, and free trade. By conducting campaigns, media events, seminars, workshops, study tours, cultural happenings, and training courses, the foundation promotes human rights, including freedom of expression, freedom of the press, children's rights, and LGBTQIA+ rights, and engages against violence targeting women and capital punishment. If you're interested in our activities, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and X. Simply check for Friedrich Naumann Foundation Africa. The links are in the show notes.